Coming up on Golf Today, it is super wild card weekend in the league where they play for pay. Joe Buck hops on to talk Eagles, Bucks, the rest of the slate, and his infatuation with the game of golf. And putting guru, eight-time PGA Tour winner Brad Faxon joins us for a past champ chat about his win at the 2001 Sony Open.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is Golf Today, an afternoon golf today, considering the golf is being played in Hawaii this week, second straight week, this time at Wailea Country Club. Seth Rayner designed one of the great golf courses on the PGA Tour, but dare I say, this is not the story. This is not the story today. What the story today is, we're back. Shane Bacon, Damon Heck. January 13th, I would not have had the over on January 12th as the first day you and I'd be doing TV together.
A little later than we expected, a little later than we wanted. It's great to be back with you. Great to be back with the people talking about this game that we love. Happy New Year. Some people say it's a little late to say it. I'm still going to say it. It's great to be back. I'm excited about the Sony Open.
And great to have some golf back. Did you see the scores last week? Did you see how low everybody went? 34 under par?
Had I been in studio, I would have talked about the game's too easy. At the highest level. You've heard me say that quite a bit.
Three players shooting 30 under. But I want to do something. We have a little kind of a throwback Thursday, if you will. I want to look back on our first show. It was around this time last year to kind of look and see how things have changed, how we have changed. A throwback Thursday to us throwing it back to 2021 in studio.
Happy New Year. Speaking of new studio, a new city, Stamford, Connecticut, a new partner in Shane.
You're stuck with
Bacon.
Me again.
I love this. Though. We have a great history ourselves.
We have a rich history?
A rich history of victory. Much more on that as the weeks and months wear on. This is what you will see Wednesday through Sunday, Golf Today. So much to talk about. I'm excited, but what are you most excited about?
Well, something I am looking forward to in 2021 is Michelle Wee.
Michelle Wee, how about that? And I think I was wearing the same sweater.
We talked about Michelle Wee yesterday. We did a little throwback to 04 and saw her out there as a 14-year-old playing against the PGA Tour pros. Interesting to look back. My haircut was a little higher and a little bit tighter. But we do have 2022 to look forward to. So many storylines already. And, I mean, we got a great field at the Sony this week as well.
Tell you what, I love this time of year. Just seeing the players, kind of what they have in their bag, maybe the new duds that they're breaking out for 2022. But a lot of great storylines. We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. Once again, the birdies, they're available in 2022. Tyler Duncan, PGA Tour winner, 6 under through 13 holes.
Tyler Duncan, our leader. Let's check in with Steve Burkowski.
Hey there, Shane. No surprise to see good scoring here at the Sony Open in Hawaii. And you guys just touched on it. We were treated to an absolute gem a week ago on Maui with all those record-setting scores at Kapalua. I don't think they're going to get that low this week. But, again, no stranger to seeing good ones here. 21 under the winning total for Kevin Na a year ago. The golf course, talking to players and caddies, a little soft. The rough, a little bit thick. And you might ask why. Let's go back to last Wednesday. These are some images of this golf course 8 days ago. From January 1st through January 6th, this place received 11 inches of rain. Yeah, I said that right. 11 inches of rain in a six-day span. Yeoman's work by the entire staff here to pump out the bunkers, to drain the water where they could. And again, it is playable. Again, potentially a little soft, a little bit of a breeze. Sun is out, so it should continue to dry out throughout the course of the week. But I thought those images certainly worth sharing with the viewers to see just how much rain was on this golf course 8 days ago. Again, a tip of the cap to everyone here for getting it in very good shape. And if the wind stays down, always a big factor here, maybe we'll get to those low mid-20s, guys, come Sunday.
Can't say enough about the great work of the golf course staffs week to week on the PGA Tour. Steve Burkowski for us in Hawaii. Time now for not bold, very bold, and too bold as we look ahead to 2022.
I see where you're going with it.
Doing some predictions.
We haven't got to predict things yet. We haven't been together yet. We had some predictions last year. One of my predictions was about the Korda sisters, but I'm focusing on one Korda here on my not bold prediction.
Where are you going?
Saying Nelly Korda's going to win another major. I mean, Nelly Korda understands what it means to be the best player in the world, what it means to be world number one, how consistent she has been in major championships. I feel like Nelly Korda will win at least one major championship in 2022. And when you look past the victory last season, her first major title, She had four top 19s, D. I mean, she played really consistent golf in the major championships. I'm looking for Nelly to win another major this year.
I think she has the game. I think she has the personality. I think she comes from the right family in terms of an athletic family. Of course, the Corders and her father, a major champ from tennis, a big sis, Seb Corder, who made it to the round of 16 at Wimbledon. I just think everything about her, her whole incubation period, the way she goes about her business, how serious she is, how nothing seems too big for her to win a major and Olympic gold in the same season, I think that's not a bold prediction.
You know, Eamon made a point on the show yesterday about Nelly Korda and about the family and said, you know, for some people, for some athletes, especially individual athletes, maybe it's tough to find that competitive edge going into a season after you've accomplished so much. But given the family, given the sister on the LPGA Tour as well, given the parents, given the brother, it's always been there. That competitive push is always going to be there because you've grown up with that. You know nothing else.
Talk to Archie Manning about raising Cooper, Eli, and Peyton. I mean, there's always fights and tears occasionally at the dinner table or outside. But when they get to be at this age and at this level of their profession, they just know how to do it. Nothing seems too big. Nothing is kind of out of the reach for them to accomplish.
See, you got just a not bold. I mean, I don't need anything super bold. You don't even have to hit bold on the computer. You got a not bold prediction.
So we're not going to go all caps on this.
Yeah. This is bold. Just, I mean, this is happening is the point.
Colin Morikawa is going to win a third major championship.
Another one.
That's a not bold prediction. I think someone kind of similar to Nelly Korda in that we have seen how this player goes about his business. And that is about never getting too high, never getting too low. The iron play is fantastic. His ability to get to a golf course that he has never seen before and perform so well. I just love how steady he is. I love his iron game. We saw it, of course, at the PGA. We saw it at the Open. We've seen it at a Ryder Cup now. Nothing is too big for this player.
And it seems like the part of his game he needs to show off, because the iron play is going to be there. The driving is going to be there. Yes. The fairway wood play is going to be there. I think he might be the most underrated player in the world right now in terms of fairway woods. But it seems like the putter, which is really the winning club for Colin Morikawa, shows up in these major championships. When you look at the way he putted at the PGA Championship, when he led the field in strokes gained putting, when you look at the way he putted last season at that Open Championship, when he gets to these events, the putter shows up as well. That is so important for a Colin Morikawa, who is this generation's best iron player.
I learned more about Colin Morikawa on that final nine holes at the Open when Jordan Spieth was breathing down his neck and Colin didn't have the best ball striking week that he wanted. And he kept getting up and down and saving par and holding that round together to win a second major championship.
So we got Nelly and Colin Morikawa. Just mark them down. They're major winners in 2022. What's your, let's go very bold.
Very bold?
Very bold's all bolds on like the subject line of an email.
NB Park is going to win a major championship.
Ooh, I like that.
And you might say, is that very bold? She has seven major championships, none since 2015. And now in this era of Nelly Korda, in this era of Yuka Saso and Jin Young Ko, and I know there are five major championships, I think it's very bold to say that NB Park, who has been quiet as far as major championships are concerned, wins an eighth major this season.
The game felt like it was getting back to that NB Park level of consistency last season. I'm with you. I mean, if it may be not a victory, but I do think that she's going to get herself in the contention, at least in the conversation in a couple of the major championships. A couple of the golf courses have always set up well for NB Park. Frankly, when you putt as well as she does, every golf course sets up well for you. But I like the NB Park call. And I've got a very bold prediction as well in terms of a big, big golf event in 2022. And mine is the President's Cup. I think the Internationals win the President's Cup. And maybe this is a bit deep. Maybe this is a bit of a speak it into existence type of situation, because we need the Internationals to win the President's Cup. I mean, this event needs an international victory. Even if you're an American golf fan, you want this event to be competitive. These team events are so much fun to watch. But I think Trevor Immelman has a good process for the season. I think he's talked to a lot of people and he's approached this the correct way. But I feel like when we ran through the teams and some of the play as of late from these players. And if these international players continue on this trajectory, they're going to be a scary group, at least 1 through 9.
It's time. It's time. And maybe Cam Smith and the 3,400, did that put it over the top for you?
It helped.
I mean,
Sungjae
Im, Abe Anser. I mean, it is time. And I love the fact that we're starting to see some competitiveness between the internationals and the Americans. But much like the Americans almost had to win in Kohler and win that Ryder Cup, I think the internationals, with a popular captain in Trevor Immelman and with these players like Leishman, these young leaders who are starting to find their feet like Cam Smith, this is the year. This is the time. I thought about that for being my very bold prediction as well. You took it from me, but I 100%
agree with you.
I pulled it right out from under. On your first show, for goodness sake.
Should we get a little crazy now?
Too bold. We're getting, this is the whole email's bold.
Okay,
too bold. Everything's bold. You're bold in everything you can bold. What is the most bold prediction of yours?
Somebody's shooting 57 this year.
Oh, wait, so,
57 on the PGA Tour.
Not 59?
No, 59's been done. 58's been done. 57 is coming. And it might happen this week. It might happen at Wailea. I mean, we saw the conditions. It's 6 under already for Tyler Duncan. We know that Justin Thomas has shot 59 on this golf course back in 2017. I say it all the time. At the highest level, with the talent of these players, the way they go about their business, the way the golf courses are set up, the conditions almost perfect. I think that the PGA Tour is rife for a 57 this year.
We asked PointsBet to name a bet on a player shooting in the 50s this week. And, you know, you're kind of thinking about that number. Maybe it's plus 500 or plus 1,000. It was only plus 350 for the week.
Really?
There's only been one round in the 50s ever in this event. But I think PointsBet is along with you on this. I think they feel a really, really low round coming. And if the conditions are there, if the winds are down, this is a golf course that you can go out there and fire something crazy. I don't know if it's this week, but I do believe that we're going to get closer and closer to that number. And I think it's going to happen in the next couple of years.
These players are so good. I think the equipment is so good, but their talent is so good. And the way they can dial in their clubs these days, they just have things at their disposal in terms of preparation for these golf tournaments that players 20, 30 years ago didn't have.
We were talking after 34 under wins. We're talking about kind of dial a shot. You know, Johnny Miller used to call Mac O'Grady dial a shot. You know,
right.
He could hit any golf shot he wanted to. And it sure feels like most of the modern players these days are kind of dial a shot. They have all the knowledge you could ever want about the golf swing and their distance control, and it's simply about the putter. Ooh. If the putter's there for a top 10 or 15 player in the world right now, they're going to go incredibly low. My very, very most bold, crazy bold prediction is we're going to have 4 first-time major winners on the men's side.
Four.
All four.
A sweep.
The sweep.
No Morikawa.
No Morikawa.
No Brooks Koepka.
No Jordan
Spieth. Rory at the Masters.
No Rory McIlroy. Can I just list off some of the names that have not won a major championship?
Well, you're going to do it anyway, so go ahead and do it.
Okay, Xander, Victor Hovland, Cantlay, Cam Smith, Bern Scheffler, Finau, Sungjae, Leishman, Homa, Horschel. I could keep going. Kokrak, Hatton, Abe Anser. These are some of the best players in the world, and they're hungry to join that major group. This is not to mention any of the rookies on tour this year.
Yeah.
They could go out there and snag a major championship as well. I would not be surprised if this very, very all caps slam down the bold button happens at the end of 2022 in the major season.
It is a fascinating time in the game. You've got players like Justin Thomas who wants to break back into the winner's circle in a major championship. Jordan Spieth, who would have thought that the major championship well would have run dry for him. A lot of great players who haven't won a major. I think that's going to be tough to do, but that's why he said it's too bold.
It's
way
too
out
bold.
There.
Do I believe it? Maybe. No, I don't totally believe it, but it is too bold. What is your too bold prediction for 2022? Jump on social media. We're asking you to go on social, by the way. That's how excited we are for the show. Tweet at us. We'll throw those up later in the program.
All right. How about the guest lineup today? We got Joe Buck, 2020 Pete Rozelle Award winner. Going to talk a little football, talk a little golf. Nota Begay III, 4-time PGA Tour winner, going to join us from Wildlife Country Club. Alvaro Ortiz, brother of Carlos, winner of the Latin America Amateur Championship back in 2019, joins the program. And Fax. Do I just say Fax?
Fax joins.
Fax joins.
Fax will be in.
A little past champs chat.
Mention Joe Buck.
Coming up next.
Coming up.
Fantastic. What are we talking, football?
Talking a little golf?
Talk super wild card weekend.
I want to get some Tom. I got to ask him some Tom Brady stuff.
Let's do it.
I'm fascinated by Tom Brady.
Anything under the table, going to do it.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Back on Golf Today, Super Wild Card Weekend kicks off this Saturday on NBC and Peacock as Joe Burrow and the AFC North champion Cincinnati Bengals. That's right, you heard that correctly. They host Derek Carr and the Las Vegas Raiders. An AFC wild card game. Kickoff 4:30 p.m. Eastern time Saturday.
You'd be glued to that one, D.
Yeah.
And then Sunday night, Arrowhead Stadium, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs host Mr. Ben Roethlisberger. A surprise with the Steelers in the playoffs. That is scheduled for an 8:15 p.m. kick. That is Sunday night on NBC and Peacock. Look at the, you said Super Wild Card Weekend, D. There are games everywhere. Yeah. All these games.
Incredible, you know, Saturday to Monday. How about Mike Tomlin? No losing seasons in 15 in the steel.
Underrated.
City, they'll be underdogs at Kansas City. You got Cardinals and Rams. I am, of course, a Raider fan, as you mentioned. They were dysfunctional for a large part of the season. They turned it around at the end, I think, led by Derek Carr.
You see Eagles-Bucks there on Fox at 1 p.m. on Sunday. Joe Buck will be calling that game alongside Troy Aikman. Look at that image of Mr. Joe Buck.
Where's that? I mean, where's that taken?
He's interviewing Jordan Spieth, U.S. Open champion at Chambers Bay, Dustin Johnson at Oakmont. Flagged it on the 72nd hole, and Joe Buck joins us now, one of the great voices in our business and one of the great guys. Joe, we appreciate you taking some time. And let's start with a little NFL. Is this the most wide open you can remember the NFL playoffs being?
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought I was doing your podcast when you texted me. I would have dressed up.
I think you look great. You should have put a sweater on.
I know. I mean, your sweater budget at that show has just got to be through the roof. I think this is the most wide open that I can ever remember it, because if you think about the regular season, there were weeks that were like, what in the heck is going on in this league? So thankfully, I'm not a gambler. If I was, I'd probably be arrested because I broadcast games for a living. But I would have lost my shirt, because the minute you think you can figure out who's going to win or who should win, it all gets turned on its head. So I think it rolls into the postseason where, you know, if anybody thinks, well, all these favorites are going to win, the low seeds are all going to roll, then they haven't watched sports ever, and they certainly haven't watched the NFL this season.
Joe, 14 teams, some great stories. Big Ben's last ride, the suddenly not dysfunctional Las Vegas Raiders. What team of the 14 fascinates you the most and why?
I mean, you know, the fascinating ones are the ones that, I think you're asking me that, that come out of nowhere and surprise everybody. And so you look at all the high seeds, meaning the high numbers, the lower seeds. And I'm fascinated by Cincinnati to see if they can validate what they did in the regular season. And Joe Burrow is just an absolute stud. I'm happy for your Las Vegas Raiders and the way they finished the season. As you said, they were dysfunctional for a long time. They've been through a lot, and to find themselves in this tournament, I think, is impressive. I think the National Football Conference is a little bit more cut and dried. And I think when you look at the top four teams, you look at the four best teams, and any one of those four could end up in the Super Bowl. I don't feel that way in the AFC. I think there's going to be one or two upsets where on that championship Sunday, we're going to see a high seed playing, in my opinion, Kansas City, to get to the Super Bowl.
Joe, we've seen a little of this in golf, but it continues to shock me in the NFL. These players playing longer and longer into their careers. You've got Tom Brady this weekend. When you chat with Tom Brady, when you walk away from conversations with this guy, what is your takeaway? Because I'm not sure we've ever seen somebody as obsessed with their craft.
No, I agree. I'm blown away. And I know Troy is. I think it speaks to how great he is that Troy is as blown away as he is. Every time we get off the phone, you can tell he's still invigorated. You can tell he's locked in. You can tell his competitive fire burns brighter and hotter than I think it ever has, because I think he's constantly challenging himself and trying to prove that at 44 – he's just as good as he's ever been. And in some ways, when you look at the numbers, you can make the case that the last two seasons are two of the best seasons he's had in his career, which is saying a lot. So his numbers are stunning from when he turned 40 up until now. And, you know, I don't think he was kidding when he said, I think I could play till 50. I think the home life is going to call him in before Father Time in the NFL will end his career. I wouldn't bet against him playing as long as he wants to.
100% agree. 50 is very, very young. You know, Brady loves golf. We all love golf, but we also hate it a little bit, especially when we don't play well. Where are you in your relationship with the game?
I'm obsessed. I mean, I think Shane will tell you. I constantly think about my swing. It was just above 50 in St. Louis. I went out and I chipped and putted today, and I make notes, and I'm constantly amending those notes. And every time I'm like, this is the one. I'm going to have this in my little scorebook in my pocket. If I just do this, I will be a scratch golfer for the rest of my life. And the next time I play, I tear up the little piece of paper and I'm back at the drawing board. I'm not well when it comes to the game of golf. I love it too much.
Joe, you're a very famous person. Why are you not a pro AT&T Pro-Am staple? Why are you not playing in that event every year?
Well, it's on CBS, first of all. That's what I tell myself. Okay. I played 2 years in a row, and I stunk. I've played better in the Tahoe event, but I would love to. If Mr. McKenzie and the crew want to invite me back, I'll be very happy to show up and be frustrated out at Pebble Beach.
Joe, I know you don't like talking about your own golf game a lot, but do you mind telling the Augusta National story about you being kind of on the heater on the front nine?
I went Aikman throughout the invitation, friends with Joe Ford, who's, as you know, Joe Ford is a phenomenal human being, and he was nice enough to host us. And I was a little hesitant to ask if we could play where they're playing the tournament from, but I did, and Troy and I went back there on the final day, and I'm playing like I'm waiting for lightning to hit me. I'm three over par. We're getting to nine. It starts to drizzle a little bit, and I make my par on nine. I'm like, oh my God, this is the best nine holes I could ever put together. As I said, it started to sprinkle, and Joe Ford kind of looks around and he goes, well, I've had about enough of this rain. Let's get some soup. And in we went. And I never got – now, that's probably the good part, right, is that I didn't get to shoot 1,000 on the back. So I can always wonder what might have been. And it was sunny 45 minutes later. I was with, like, a Pinkerton guard in one of the cabins as they made their way back to Arkansas.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hopefully you get to go back and complete – that nine. Have a great weekend. You got the Eagles and the Bucks, and it's been hard for me looking at that hat for the last 8 minutes or so, but I know you got a kid at campus there at SC.
My daughter's at USC. Okay. I am paying tuition at this place.
You get to wear the hat.
I can wear the hat.
Fair.
It fits.
Right.
I have a huge head. That's what I'm going with.
There he is. Joe Buck, father of a USC student.
That's okay with
that's okay.
That's okay with you. Joe,
thanks,
we appreciate
pal.
The time. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. I enjoy watching you. Well done.
Thanks so much. And look at the Super Wild Card weekend. Man. Joe's going to call Eagles, Bucks, but look at some of those games.
You know, I covered the NFL for a time at the New York Times and Sports Illustrated. I'm excited. I'm excited about this slate of games. You can see it Saturday, NBC, and Peacock on Sundays. Well, all the way to Monday. We got a budget like the kids' bedtimes. It's tough during these weekends because the kids, they want to stay up all every
of
night.
Of course they do. Look at these games. Got Steelers-Chiefs on NBC on Sunday night and a Monday night game. That's a lot of football.
Yes, and golf this weekend as well. In fact, we get some island time right now. Notable game. Going to join us from Wild Eye Country Club, Seth Rayner. Jim, for Golf Today return.
You know what? It's kind of a superstar Thursday for us. We've got Nota Begay the Third with us. Nota Begay joins us now from Hawaii. Hey, Nota, when the work schedule comes out, what's your reaction when Hawaii is on the first 2 weeks of your schedule?
Well, guys, first I got to go find my coolest Hawaii shirt and make sure I put that in the bag. And then I just plan my days around the TV schedule, and then I do a little golf, a little beach, a little boogie boarding, and, you know, there's so many activities out here, and let's just say I'm not missing that cold weather that you guys are seeing back in Connecticut.
Oh, we are jelly, as the kids say. Amazing lifestyle in Hawaii. But how about when the tour goes to, like, a Seth Rayner design, like Wild Eye Country Club? The dimple heads get excited. The architect lovers get excited. Do the players get jazzed by old-school architecture in your mind?
I think a small handful of traditionalists that sort of love to, you know, really appreciate the architectural value and the contributions architects make. But for the most part, the players don't really care. They're coming out here. It's a huge opportunity for a player to come into an event that doesn't have the strongest field and really make a name for themselves. There's been a lot of players early on in the Hawaii swing or in at Sony that have, you know, gone on to win their first tournament or catapult themselves up the leaderboard. And now with the season starting in the fall, it really allows a player maybe like a Taylor Gooch to continue to push themselves up the FedEx Cup points rankings, because that has become such a pivotal and I think motivating factor between players that are wanting to make that final 30 and get to Eastlake and really cash in a variety of ways on the opportunities that the PGA Tour is providing for every player out here right now.
Nota, hearing a lot about how the wind is down again this week as it was last week. How do players go about cobbling a game plan together this week? Is it pedal to the metal, attack, attack, attack? Are you grabbing your caddy and say, hey, we're going like green light special on every single pin?
Well, as you've seen the scores, Damon, so far, you know, you got Chapel up there at 6-under through 15. You got to go low. I mean, I don't care if there's no wind or if there's wind. Players step up on that first tee knowing that they have to shoot low scores, hit quality shots, and make putts. And regardless of what the conditions present, this scoring here is traditionally fairly low. It's historically always one of the lowest cuts of the year. And this year, one of the things that the PGA Tour setup committee has done in order to sort of neutralize scoring is the rough, due to the heavy rains that they've had in the month of December here in Honolulu, have allowed the rough to sort of stay fairly high because they haven't had a chance to cut it or groom it as much as they typically do. So I think you're going to see a little bit of a premium on hitting fairways and accuracy. Typically over the last 10 years, the win areas hit about 55% of the fairways, which is below the tournament average for tour winners over the last 10 years by about 10%. So I think that number is going to go a little bit higher just simply because the rough is a little bit more dicey this week, and in an effort to sort of keep scoring at bay to a certain degree, but also to keep the players honest.
All right, Nota, it's the question that everybody's asking this week. Did the level make it? Did the level make it to Wailea?
The level made it to Wailea, and I'm really having trouble finding any kind of slope out here, with the exception of maybe on one of the steep slopes on the green. It's in my golf cart. I may bring it out just for old time's sake. I know some of the viewers out there might have missed it from last week, but I've got a strong response. Anytime that we can clarify sort of what players are dealing with in that kind of sense, people really enjoyed it. So. It may make an appearance this week. Who knows?
Nota, is this your own level? I mean, how do you expense a level? Is it under miscellaneous? Like, did you buy this in Hawaii? Did you bring it with you?
I'll find a way to sneak it in there somehow. You know how that goes. But, I would put it under miscellaneous work expense. We'll see if it gets audited.
All right, the level might not get as much use this week as it did last week, but how big of a transition is it this week for the players who did play last week with all those hills and undulations? Their legs might be a little bit gassed as they made their way to Honolulu this week.
I don't think the transition's too difficult because now you're going off of true numbers. I mean, you're hitting off mostly flat lies. There's not a lot of elevation change. So anything that you're using from a yardage standpoint is really going to play just depending in accordance with the wind. But if in contrast to last week where you had to come up with your true yardage and then you had to factor in downslope, you had to factor in grain, you had to factor in wind, there were a lot more calculations that had to happen. So anybody, the 20 plus players that made the trip from Maui over to Oahu now are going to feel a little bit of a reprieve from having to crunch all those numbers, and not only crunching them, but you have to trust them, which is so what was so remarkable about watching Cameron Smith and John Rahm and Matt Jones really put on a show over the final 36 holes is they were not only picking the right numbers, but their club selection and shot execution was so exceptional that I was even extremely impressed when I walked off the golf course looking like this was three of the finest, you know, tournaments that we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years.
Do you see what Nota did there at the end? Mm-hmm. You see, the helicopter came by and Nota raised his voice level. That is professional broadcasting.
That's his helicopter.
That is professional broadcasting. Nota, we love you. We thank you for your time. We thank you for your level, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, we're going to flash back to 2001, D. Remember what happened in 2001?
Speaking of great putters.
I mean, I would say the best of all time. I'm going to say it. The best putter of all time.
Should we ask him? I mean, I think we're going to talk to Brad Faxon. I mean, is it you? Is it Crenshaw? Is it Lauren Roberts?
He's a humble guy. He's not going to say himself. I'm saying it for him. Brad Faxon's the best putter that has ever played professional golf.
Well, he won the Sony Open in 2001. And there's a reason why I imagine people call him players today. They lean on that knowledge that he has with the flat stick.
Well, you said we're going to chat with him. It's time for Past Champ Chat. Talked about his victory in 2001. Brad Faxon joins us now. And, Fax, before we get going with some of the questions, we just kind of wanted to run through some of the highlights with you, if you're cool, from your victory in 2001.
I'm with me. I love those highlights because they're all good.
They're the good stuff. Let's run through them. Here's Brad Faxon from 2001. He started the day with a three-stroke lead. Fax, when you got a three-shot lead, what's the mentality?
Well, I played with Ernie Els and Tom Lehman on Saturday. I got paired with them again on Sunday. I was nervous. Those were two high-caliber players, both top 10 in the world. I was confident with my game, but I got really lucky on the second hole. I missed the fairway to the right, missed the green way to the left, and I chipped in for a three. Unlikely. Ernie Els just shook his head, and that kind of put me off to the races, Shane.
5 years prior, Fax, you finished runner-up to Jim Furyk in a playoff. How much did this golf course just make sense to you? You had a great record there.
Well, it shouldn't have made sense to me, Damon, because that course had the least amount of fairways hit on average for the PGA Tour. A lot of dog legs that bent with wind blowing the opposite direction of the dog leg. I was never good at hitting fairways, and they had one of the only courses back then that had common Bermuda fairways, so even the fairways weren't perfect to hit out of in my early days, but they got so much better. And you were talking about putting. That was one of the best putting weeks I ever had in my career. Those greens at Wailea were so sensational. And Damon, my second date of my life with my wife Dory was at Newport, Rhode Island. And that week in Hawaii at the Sony Open, I was still on my honeymoon, so that was a pretty good way to kick off a marriage.
Atta kid. There you go, Fax.
Fax, we saw you in a bit of trouble there at the 10th. Looked like you had to kick a field goal between those palm trees.
Well, those are a lot of those palm trees are pretty famous. And again, another fairway miss for Fax, and it was not on the top. I got a little gap there with the V and kind of hit it high on the face, so it went out knuckly. It landed on the green. It rolled out there up close and another birdie.
Did you get energy competing with Ernie Els? I mean, that's kind of near the height of his power. Tom Lehman was coming off winning an Open championship not too long after that. How much did you enjoy kind of going head-to-head with those guys?
Well, you know, you just watch Ernie swing and it relaxes you. You know, that effortless power that he had, he exuded all the time. His confidence, tee to green. Lehman was one of the steadiest players we've ever seen. I had previous success, like you said, at Wailea. But that was funny. That year, I hadn't played golf for 7 weeks. I was in Rhode Island. It was cold, you know, too cold to play. I got out to Hawaii maybe, you know, a week beforehand, and that was my warm-up for the season. And sometimes this game just doesn't make sense. But I would say, if I had to think over the course of my career, I shot 20 under that week. I think I ended up winning by four. The par was reduced from 288 to 280. They took two of the existing par fives, the first hole and the 13th, made those par fours. And I made an eagle every day and shot 20 under par on a 280. That was some good golf for me.
Fax, you won 8 times on the PGA Tour. When you kind of look at all 8 of those wins individually and you kind of focus on 2001 at the Sony, what was your takeaway from that week with your golf game? What outside of the short game and the putting felt like it worked so well for you?
Well, I had started working with an instructor who was a friend named Ron Gring, or G-R-I-N-G, had played the tour. He had me feeling so confident. I remember walking on the range and thinking everybody else had no idea what they were thinking about the golf swing. And I really played well that week. I drove the ball exceptionally well. My iron play was fantastic. And I combined that with, superlative putting week. So that, I think of all the tournaments I've ever won and played, and that was the best golf I've ever played in my life.
So you win in 2001. I want to go back to the 1996 Sony Open. You made like a 50-foot eagle putt on the 72nd hole despite the glare from the sun. You said you couldn't even make out the hole, but you still made it, got to that playoff. What do you remember about that putt? You said it was the most excited you'd ever been on a golf course.
Well, Steve Stricker was in the group with me as well, and I remember when my caddy, John Burke Cubby, pulled the flagstick, I lost view of the hole. There was so much glare. It was downgrain, and that thing crashed in the back. And I still got hair on raising on my arms here. I had no idea what I was doing. I, I,
I went berserk, screaming, and you lose all control of your conscious thought. It was a great moment. Stricker high-fived me. I think my caddy, Cubby, almost fell off the green. He went off the back. And I remember I was as equally happy as I was to make that putt. I was disappointed to lose in that playoff to Furyk because I had a chance to win on the second playoff hole. He had a bunker shot that would have gone 20 feet by and hit the flagstick, and it came down, he dropped and made it for par. So, I mean, sometimes that's the way it rolls. But, that, I mean, another great memories from Sony Open and Wildlife.
Brad, these days players kind of dominate with distance, and you've worked closely with Rory McIlroy over the years. Watching him hit his driver is art. But you had a different ability to kind of crush souls. I mean, you would make these long putts, these 50-footers, these putts that you said Ernie Els was shaking his head. I heard Brandel Chamblee tell stories of the first time he played with you, and you had a 3-iron to his wedge, and you made the putt from the front of the green, and he missed his putt and made a par. What was it like kind of crushing souls with a putter and not with power?
Well, one of my favorite players to watch when I was growing up was Tom Watson, and he could demoralize a player, too, with the way he could hit it all over the place. And certainly he was a much better player than I ever was, and he hit it a little bit further relative to his peers. But, you know, you always stay in the game, and I thought that you could really put a knife in somebody's heart when you grinded it out. I liked having that nickname of being a grinder, and I think so many of the great players were, like Tiger Woods, the ultimate grinder, where he never gives up. Seve Ballesteros, another one of those guys that could hit all over the map and still get it in the hole.
Facts, go back to 2000, 2001. Folks were fleeing the wound ball, going to the solid core golf ball, kind of right in the midst of your run in 2001. What do you remember about that time, just in terms from an equipment standpoint?
Well, the traditionally Titleist launches new balls every 2 years in Vegas in the fall. And the Pro V1 came out. There had been a couple other companies that had solid core and solid piece construction, 3 or 4 piece construction. And we had been testing the Titleist Pro V1 prototypes for 5 years. So it wasn't brand new to us as players. It was brand new to the audience. But it was the first time it was legal, and we were able to play it in competition. And I shot 64 out there in Vegas that first round. And I said, boy, this game has really changed. This is a much better ball. Went a little bit further. You could control the spin. So, you know, a hard court ball that we thought was only for the average golfer, now we had the capability to hit the ball far and still have, you know, control, spin, and feel around the greens. It really changed the game back there in 2000.
Facts, how has it been transitioning to the coaching aspect of golf? I mean, somebody that's been so excellent at one craft specifically, how do you explain that to other players?
Well, it's funny because I came at this teaching side from being a player first, you know, and playing on the tour for a long time. Where a lot of instructors, they know way more about teaching than I do, and I'm learning every day about mechanics, which I know a little bit about, but didn't have to know as a player, or maybe sometimes I knew too much about as a player, because if you fill a player's head with too many thoughts, they lose their athletic instinct, and that's bad for shooting low scores. So I think what I can help players with, I come from the ability to, what can you think about while you play? What's not too much? What's enough? And my team at Jupiter Hills here, Jason, Lance, Tyler, Neil, all these guys know an awful lot, and we're having some fun.
Yeah, a lot of folks know they have trouble with the putter. Give Brad Faxon a call. All right, pal, it's time for Quiz the Champ. We're actually going to ask you some questions about your victory in 2001, so got to pay close attention. Are you ready for this?
My memory's gone.
Here we go.
He's not confident.
Well, he knows the 20-under winning score is correct, so you finished the week at 20-under back in 2001. How many strokes clear of your good friend Billy Andrade were you?
Well, that's funny. Billy came out to watch me play with his caddy, Ziggy. I think they sat on the 17th tee, and Billy had a good week that week. I would say I was 7 or 8 shots ahead of Billy.
Wow, close. Really close.
9 times. 9. 9.
Not bad. That's a good start. That's a good start, Fax. All right, you finished at 260 for the week. That tied the record score at Wildlife Country Club. Whose record did Brad Faxon tie?
The noted Paul Azinger, 288, I think he was, right? 260?
John Houston, unfortunately. Houston. It was close, though. 1998, he played the course. But if, like you said, it was a par 72.
What did Azinger shoot? You check that out.
We'll get Kev on
that. We'll get back to you on that.
Kev's on that one.
John Houston, by the way, could take a dip. John Houston, you shoot nothing.
No fear.
No fear, John Houston. All right, how many strokes did you lead to start the final round? We kind of mentioned it earlier. I want to see if you were paying attention.
You said 3.
Yeah, oh, he was paying attention.
Yeah, he did. All right, we got one for you. Question number four. In 2001, you held at least a share of the lead in each round the year after the Sony Open winner went wire to wire. Who was that winner in 2000? Just repeat what you'd already said. Just repeat what you've already said. Just an answer you already had given.
Ernie Els.
Paul Azinger. We're giving it to you. All right, Fax, I got a bonus question for you. This has nothing to do with your victory. But currently, how many contacts does Brad Faxon have in his iPhone currently?
Well, I remember talking to you about that with Curtis Strange, and I was close to 4,000. It's up to 4,800 now, Shane.
4,800. Wow. 4,800 contacts, and I'm guaranteeing Damon Hack is one of those facts. We really appreciate the time, my man. Thanks so much for joining us. And I love kind of going down memory lane with you.
I love memory lane with you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Pretty cool talking to Brad Faxon while he's holding a putter.
I know. And he's holding the putter.
I mean, the putter.
That's the weapon.
Whoa, yes. Yeah, it's like Michael Jackson with the black hat or the white glove. I mean, that's Brad Faxon with the putter. Look at that, folks.
Yeah, that's the gamer. He's got a lot of nice Scotties, but that is the gamer.
That is the gamer. All right, speaking of gamers, Phil Mickelson's a gamer. We're going to be handing out some love for Lefty. What did he do back in the day? Special anniversary. He was young, whole life ahead of him. They were going crazy in the state of Arizona.
Pop collar. I like the look.
Back on Golf Today, take a look at a 9-time PGA Tour winner Matt Kuchar. The most recent win was the 2019 Sony Open in Hawaii.
That's this event. Yeah, that's this tournament.
Four-shot victory over Andrew Putnam. Shot 22 under for the week. Did the man known as Kuch.
Emmett Smith under par. And we're going to talk about great amateurs in a bit.
Okay.
And this was a great amateur.
Yeah.
Semifinalist in the 1996 U.S. Amateur. The next year wins the U.S. Amateur in 1997. You remember 1998 at Augusta National. And you hold that bunker shot, 16, on Friday, dad on the bag. Some of the great moments from amateur golf at Augusta National in the Masters.
I still remember his dad, Peter, going crazy.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome to watch.
Incredible scene at Augusta National Golf Club many years ago. And speaking of great amateurs, on this date in golf history, about the 1991, Philip Alfred Mickelson.
Tucson Open?
Can you believe it? The most recent amateur to win on the PGA Tour. He got it done. Corey Pavin was in the mix. Tom Pertzer, Pop Collar, this putt for birdie at the last. Oh, the reaction.
Yeah, and you know, relatively muted reaction for a guy that's that young and winning on the PGA Tour. I'll say this. The modern amateur player has the confidence that Phil Mickelson had in 1991. But back then, it was so rare to have that much belief in yourself. I mean, you hear stories about Phil Mickelson and his run into winning those U.S. amateurs, giving putts for par from 20 feet when Phil Mickelson would be inside of his opponent for birdie. I mean, Phil Mickelson had as much self-belief in his golf game and his abilities as anybody, and that's why he was able to go out there and compete. He was not intimidated by the professional golfers, and he truly believed that he belonged there even as he was still in college.
Phil told me a story 5 years ago. I asked him about winning the Tucson Open. That previous Christmas, Phil, his sister Tina, brother Tim, they put three goals down in a vase that Christmas. And Phil told me among his goals was to win the Tucson Open as an amateur. Weeks later, he won the Tucson Open as an amateur. He told me that it tells you the power of setting goals, the power of the subconscious mind. Remarkable that he had the wherewithal, the belief, the self-belief to say, this is going to be my goal. And then a few weeks later, he went out and absolutely did it.
Longevity is a skill. We talked about this yesterday with Charles Howell III. Eamon and I discussed kind of the ability to play good golf for a long time, play 20 PGA Tour events since 2000 if you're Charles Howell III. And when you think about Phil Mickelson winning as a 50-year-old a major championship and being the last player to win as an amateur on the PGA Tour back in 1991, this is the legacy of Phil Mickelson, as he's been so great for so long, and he's truly never fallen off. He's had some down years, and he struggled with his golf games at times, and there were times late in his 40s where we weren't sure we were going to see Phil Mickelson win again. But his ability to always want to grind and to always try. When you talk, D, I know you've talked to plenty of players late in their 40s as they get closer and closer to the Champions Tour, and when they talk about that, they talk about the motivation, about finding that motivation, because it wanes when you get a bit older, and it's never waned with Phil Mickelson.
It's one thing to have the talent, which he has. He still has the hunger. He loves the game. If you talk to professional athletes, they don't all love what they do. Some want to get away from it. I have buddies who play golf with Phil. They play with, like, this is in his down weeks. He loves to compete. He loves to gamble and have fun and talk trash. There's a reason he likes to hang out with the JTs and the Ricky Fowlers and the he loves to mix it up with these youngsters. This is someone who a long time ago was the next Nicklaus guy. He won that Tucson Open in his junior year, did not turn pro, stayed all 4 years. I asked him, Phil, how come we haven't seen amateurs win now? He said, most of them turned pro. You haven't Jordan Spieth turned pro. If Jordan Spieth had stayed in college, he might have won. If Justin Thomas had stayed at Alabama, he might have won on the PGA Tour as an amateur as well.
I think this record will fall soon. I just think the college player is getting more polished and more confident in the coaching and everything that goes into what you do on those 2 or 3 years, as you said, maybe not 4 years in college, but I feel like this record will fall. But when you think about players that have won on the PGA Tour as an amateur, I mean, the list is very, very short. And you think about Phil Mickelson being the last to do it in 1991. I mean, Scott Verplank, one of the great amateurs of all time, winning in 85. You see Doug Sanders in 56. But, I mean, that you're looking at a list as limited as anything in golf when you only have four names.
Yeah, it's rare, it seems, in sports that records just stop. You know, 1991, no one.
Great point. It just sounds.
Since. But Phil was ready with his answers. No, it's not about they're not good enough. It's just that they're not staying. They're not staying the 4 years. I mean, it would be an anomaly for a player as talented as Phil Mickelson to stay all 4 years today.
So we have not seen an amateur win on the PGA Tour, but D, we have seen amateurs win professional events. I mean, those are some who's who names right there of players that have gone on to win. I mean, you look at Harris English winning in 2011. Lydia Ko, three wins as an amateur. It's still done. We just have not seen it on the PGA Tour.
Taya Titico there at the bottom. A couple Georgia Bulldogs you mentioned, Harris English and Russell Henley. Ryu Ishikawa was like a child when he was 15 years of age when he won in Japan. Lo, those many years ago, the Bashful Prince. The nickname, not bashful. And how about Shane Lowry? Do you still remember the scene when he won as an amateur at Irish Open and Rory was there? I mean, it was just like, it was total mayhem. And those are images that stay with us when we see young people accomplish great things in this game.
Just some great, I mean, we could spend 2 hours on the show talking about great amateurs and their ability to go out there and win. We had Julie Inkster on the show this week. Julie Inkster's run as an amateur, winning three straight U.S. women's amateurs. That takes so much dedication. It takes so much mental fortitude because you've got to win match after match after match. We praise Tiger Woods for what he was able to do to win three juniors and three AMs in a row. But we forget some of the players that have been able to do something similar. Julie Inkster was great before people knew she was great. And that was really the sign. When she started to win those amateurs, I asked her at one point, I said, how close were you to losing? And she said she needed help in a second round match one time on the 18th green. You got to get a little help to go on to win these things. But when you win one, two, three enormous amateur events, it tells the real story.
The amateur aspect of golf, to me, it still remains hugely important. You think about Ryan Moore in the incredible amateur career that he had and winning U.S. Amateur, Western Amateur. These are huge, huge events, and they still matter. You think about the North and South and the U.S. Women's Amateur and the Girls Junior and the U.S. Junior Amateur. My buddy Charlie Reimer posted a picture of himself with his U.S. Junior Amateur trophy on Twitter just a couple of days ago, and the emotion that was in his voice when he talked about what those wins meant. There's some big-time names that we know, but there are also some names that we maybe don't remember.
I gotta give a little love to the, we'll call him the original Bubba, if you will. You remember Bubba Dickerson and his run? You know, we have not seen this happen much in the history of golf, a player going on to win the Western Amateur and the U.S. Amateur in the same year. Let me give you the list since 1980. Hal Sutton, Justin Leonard, Tiger, Ryan Moore, Danny Lee, and Bubba Dickerson. Bubba Dickerson wins the Western Am and had to go qualify in to the U.S. Amateur the very next day. And this is a guy that in the championship match was five down after 14 holes and claws his way back, said he found his inner Tiger Woods in that championship match, makes birdie on the 36th hole to win that U.S. Amateur. And again, maybe he doesn't turn out to be the professional golfer that we expected and wanted to, but go out and win the two biggest amateur events the same season. That is rarefied air.
Red hair, buzz cut. I mean, he was kind
Bombed it.
Character. How about a name, Glenna Colette Vare? In the 1920s, a dominant player. She won six United States women's amateurs. In 1924, a year she did not win the U.S. women's amateur, she won 59 of 60 matches.
Excuse me?
59 of 60 matches and was knocked out in the semis of the U.S. Women Amateur that year. And you're thinking Vare, I know that name. Yeah, the Vare Trophy right. on the LPGA Tour for low scoring average is named after her, even though she never competed on the LPGA Tour.
We spend a lot of time on this set praising the professional golf world. And I think we could do a good job of continuing to praise the amateur golf world because it's competitive. It's tough, and these championships matter so much for these players because not everybody's going to go on to be a great pro. But to compete in that space at that time and be able to take out some of these names, these great college players, or these players that will go on to win major championships and be in the World Golf Hall of Fame, in that little space that you have as an amateur player, there's so much to play for in so many great events, like you said.
Love that the governing bodies, the movers and shakers of this game, the USGA, Augusta National, for example, they pay great homage to the amateur game, as they should. It's a huge part of what we talk about.